I really do feel like Salvador Dali when he says, I don't do drugs, I am drugs, because I am drugs.
Vicky, it's your mother. No, you never call me. I mean, I wonder, is your finger broken?
Just don't tell my mother.
It's your mother.
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 No, you never call me.
Just don't tell my mother. Just don't.
Where the hell are you? You are never home.
Hello, my family. Welcome back to Don't Tell My Mother. I'm your host, Nikki Levy, and I'm so happy to be here with you guys. Don't Tell My Mother is a podcast where your favorite humans from movies, TV, sports, comedy tell a true story they'd never want their moms to know. But they get on this mic and they tell us. Happy 420, my friends! I live in LA, so this is like an actual holiday, you know? Even McDonald's is getting in on the action. They're selling chicken McNugs. Delicious. Well, to properly celebrate, we have a really special episode. Today, we have the mother of comedy. My childhood and adult icon, Margaret Cho. Margaret is a groundbreaking actress and comedian. I mean, she created and starred in the first ever primetime sitcom to focus on an Asian American family. Ever! And Margaret's telling a story all about her druggy rave days in 1980s San Francisco. Now, this is not the Tech Bro Bay Area that exists right now. This is the legendary, historic San Francisco that I wish still was. Guys, this is gonna get crazy. Don't listen and drive. This episode is as wacky tabacky as you would expect from the inimitable one and only Margaret Cho. Not only am I a fan because she's brilliant and hilarious, I'm inspired by Margaret because she has been this incredible stand for Asian Americans in comedy and culture for over two decades. Margaret changed the game and she continues to change it every day. And she's back with her podcast, The Margaret Cho, with a special second season titled Mortal Minority. Margaret and guests unpack historic crimes like the 1871 Chinatown Massacre or the fortune teller murders that unfortunately paved the way for the modern crimes that we see today. If you guys like true crime, you are going to love this. Break out the bowl, get out the munchies. Here is me and Margaret Cho.
Just don't tell my mother.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Don't. Margaret, first of all, just honestly on a personal note, you're amazing. And I'm just so happy
to have you. Thank you.
So where in the world are you right now since nobody's in person and I'm sitting here in my closet, my literal closet?
I am in my home in Los Angeles.
All right. So we're close, but far. You're an idol of mine forever. One of the most important, funniest comics like of my generation, which is our generation. But
yeah,
like,
thank you. I love it. Thank you. That's awesome.
So this podcast is all about stories we don't want our moms to know. What did your mom or your parents want you to be when you were growing up?
I'm not sure. They had very high aspirations to send me to an Ivy League school because that's kind of the trajectory of Korean Americans during the 80s. I think my parents also had a lot of like aspirational whiteness. I remember getting a copy of the Preppy Handbook.
The Preppy Handbook?
Yes.
Stop.
Which was a very, that is like, talk about white privilege. It's like a blueprint for white privilege.
Everybody's named Chad. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. And it's a comedy book, actually. It's not a real book. It's actually not, it's a parody of itself in a sense. But people took it very literally. And my family, I think, took it really as a kind of stepping stone of towards aspirational whiteness for Asians, which, you know, like our racial identity wasn't as clearly defined, especially in the 80s, because you didn't have a presence in the media of Asian Americans. So you sort of were kind of trying to figure out where you belonged there and where we were. And so aspirational whiteness, which kind of meant horses and Madras plaid and summer camp and these kinds of things and good grades, you know, advanced classes, college level classes when you were in junior high, that kind of stuff.
All the AP credits, right?
Yeah, very AP, very honor student, that kind of stuff was really linked to this aspirational whiteness.
Did you actually like that style or did you just completely rebel against it?
I think I rebelled against it because I became goth. So then I went like aspiral whiteness into literal whiteness where you're like wearing like the white clown white makeup and then, the crazy colored hair and... And I was actually, when I was a teenager, I went to London a few times during very pivotal times. I went to London in like 1984 when it was like goths, new wave, everything. Well,
I was
so going to
say that's the whole new wave time. That's all like that's everything.
It was really exciting. And I think I went back in 1986 and I went to a goth club in Bournemouth called the Third Side. And it was all of these boys wearing their grandmother's clothes because they didn't have mass market goth clothing. So you would just wear your grandmother's clothes, which is velvet suits with lace collars.
Oh, that's so sexy, though.
It was so sexy. And like a cameo brooch. I mean, it was drag, which I love.
Yes.
And yet it wasn't like their sexuality was defined. I think goth was really sort of a default for anybody artsy. Who kind of didn't understand. And it was also kind of like a code for queerness in a lot of ways, too.
Well, yeah, it's like I'm going to dress differently, flamboyantly, against the grain, and I'm making a statement. Because especially, by the way, in the 80s, I mean, you and I are, you know, I'm in my 40s. We're pretty much, you know, I think same generation. Like that, it was so expected for us to look like the bad kids in the John Hughes movies.
Right. There was that kind of, it was
the cool kids.
It was a cool kids. It was like a class system, but also like the goth kids were sort of the outcasts as well.
Yes.
So kids who didn't fit in and kids who kind of had a sort of an artistic bent who liked to listen to dark wave. It wasn't so much like Mr. or like new wave. It was like dark wave, like Susie and the Banshees, which I love.
Oh, I love Susie and the Banshees. I saw them in Chicago in the 90s. Oh,
so great. I love them.
It's so funny because John Cryer produces this podcast. And of course, he was Ducky.
He was so, he was more like rock. Ducky's more like a rockabilly icon. And I still think Ducky's gay. Like, I still think in my alternate universe mind that Ducky's gay.
Yes.
And that Molly Ringwald's, just there as a kind of, he wants to maybe be, you know, she's like a hag.
Absolutely, right.
But she's very, my favorite character in Pretty in Pink is Annie Potts.
Oh, Annie Potts, I could watch in anything, anytime,
she's
anywhere.
She's great in everything, but in that movie in particular, I think Ione or something, her name, not Ione, that's actually another great actress.
Ione Sky,
Ione, I think her name is Ione or something like that. Anyway, she's very memorable, and I remember being like really taken by this, to me, she was the aspirational figure in that movie.
She's Iona. I just looked her up. You're right.
Yeah.
God, you remember. Okay, you actually do remember a lot. We'll get to that later.
I remember a lot. Yeah, I do.
The other thing I love about your comedy, I mean, I love everything. So I can't even pick and choose. But one of the many, many, many things I love, because I love, you know, talking about mothers and all the good things they do and all the fucked up things that they do unintentionally often. But your mom is such a big part of your stand up, you know, like your impressions of your mother are known the world over. I mean, I think it's one of the things you are known for. How does your mother in real life compare to the mom that we know from your stand up?
Oh, I mean, she's very similar. I think that's really, I mean, she has a very mystical bent that, because my mother was raised Buddhist and then converted to Christianity, but she's never quite like let go of all of the ancestral worship that Korea is about. Because, you know, we celebrate like death days and you kind of have to take care of your relatives after they've died. In a sense, they never stop being a pain in the ass. They always are up your ass. Like, your relatives are there, whether they're alive or dead, it doesn't matter. In 1978, my parents rented out the newly vacated People's Temple in San Francisco because that was the cheapest venue to hold my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary because it was a crime scene. The place was still filled with the spirits, angry spirits of the people who had died with Jim Jones. And so my mother could see them angry at her for throwing the party there.
She could feel them.
She felt them. She said they made the food taste bad. I am not good. I see the ghosts everywhere. That was a bad idea. I just thought that, you know, they wouldn't be there, but they were there. Oh, they're so mad.
Margaret, I could listen to you do your mother all day long. That sounded terrible, but you know what I'm saying. Is there anything that you like won't talk about on stage? You have any like limits where you say,
no,
I'm not going to touch
this? I don't
this?
Think so, because my family really are used to me talking about whether it's queerness, whether it's sex, because then they're like able to apply it to, oh, she have a really vivid imagination.
You know, right, they write it off. Yeah.
They're like, oh, she's a really good writer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're also very open to things. They owned a gay bookstore in San Francisco on Polk Street called A Paperback Traffic. They purchased it in 1976 and then kept it until probably the late 90s. My father wanted to have a place that was similar to City Lights. And in the back of the bookstore, there were these rolling racks of gay romance novels that had like drawings of young men in their 20s with like cut off jean shorts and like a tank top, like blue tank top. And they were like books named Topaz and Cobalt.
Oh my God.
The writing slashed across the front and you would see them like by a lake.
Yes.
And there were these like romance novels that were like Harlequin novels, but they were sort of self-published or small publication houses that were putting them out. And then a huge magazine rack filled with like tattoo magazines, all of Ed Hardy's Tattoo Time magazines. Wow. And I think there was like fetish magazines. There was Skin 2. And then on the bottom, it was all gay porn, like Honcho and Charles Atlas catalogs. And my father employed a lot of artists and gay performers who were doing drag, who were getting full body tattoos, who were getting tons of piercings. This is like the heyday of piercings in the 90s, that sort of modern primitives thing. So
good old days.
Yeah, they were really going with the flow with that. You know, they were like very accepting and very interested. And in my childhood home, we actually had photographs on the refrigerator of one of my father's favorite employees who was full body tattooed and he was naked on the beach. And that was on our refrigerator because my dad wanted to see it.
Your parents are like, I got to be honest with you, like from what you tell me, your parents are so open-minded.
So open-minded. And the tattoo, the full body tattoo is of monks masturbating.
Stop it.
Buddhist monks masturbating. And then some sort of like, it's a sort of a weird perversion of Buddhist art where they have monks meditating, but instead of meditating, some are meditating in the scene, but others are masturbating. Yeah. And there's like penises and semen coming out. And it's on our refrigerator. And I'm 10.
But isn't that cool? It's like for a straight person, I'm guessing your parents are straight. Who knows? So but like, so as straight people and as immigrants and as people who are older, to not be threatened by that is very cool.
Yeah. Honestly. I mean, it's really amazing, but it's also funny because it's just like, you know, what did you expect that I was going to grow up to be like? if you're surrounding me with these images, but I guess that I'm really that I was intentional.
Right. Right. Or maybe they'd say, we're going to shove this in her face, all the gay stuff, all the open. And then she's going to become, you know, someone from the,
like
cool,
aversion,
the cool kids.
Aversion yeah. therapy.
Yes, exactly. Margaret, you were going to tell us a story today. I know your mom doesn't know this and you're keeping it from her. And it's about a protracted time in your life where maybe you were playing a little Russian roulette with your brain cells.
Yeah.
Margaret, tell us everything.
This is the story of how I went from being a genius in Korean, a chunje, to a slow one, chunchani. When I was a really little kid, I was also kind of deemed the family's representation. Like, also, if you're like a child of immigrants, you're always the lawyer. Lucky, like, you're the spokesperson.
Yep.
You're the press secretary of the family. You have to answer the telephone and you have to kind of just operate as family's reps. Like, so I was really like my family's esquire, whatever, attorney at law, everything. I was representing them in every area, especially doctors. So I would have to like relay information, make appointments, whatever that is. You know, I'm like the family's spokesperson. And so my mother was always very proud of the fact that I was ahead of my years in intelligence. And I do feel it. Like, I feel like when I was younger, I was really smart and I could also outsmart them and I can do whatever I wanted. And because my brain worked so quickly, I could really lie on the fly in the moment, like improv. Like, it was very much whose line is it anyway, but it was very much lying to get my way. And I could really think on my feet and I never got in trouble. And it was very easy, you know, cause I did have fairly permissive parents, but they, were completely under my spell.
Right. And it's almost like because they trust you so much, they will believe what you say. They're going to defer to you, maybe.
Yeah. So they wouldn't question, you know, me sneaking out in the middle of the night because I had somehow explained away the fact that it was really for school and for studying. So that there was like this kind of cloak of invisibility I had with my own intelligence that really started to fade when I would do drugs. And I started doing drugs when I was about 14. And it was like crazy rave drugs where you're really messing up your brain in the way that my synapses do not fire as quickly as they did. I know that part of that is due to age and probably menopause to some extent, right. But I know that it's actually due to drug abuse and drug use. And in particular, rave drugs from the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
And in combination. So I would do like old school ecstasy, which wasn't Molly. This was like full MDMA with acid. So those in combination was called candy flipping.
Wow.
I even had like a metal bar on my leather jacket that said candy flipper. I mean, it was just so stupid. And I was really like out there with like glow sticks in a field, rolling. So to the point that now when I hear the D-Light song Grooves in the Heart, I have a chemical taste that emerges from the back of my neck. It's like my lizard brain releasing this like lysergic acid and MDMA. It's really gross. And my eyeballs start to shake.
Tell me how you kind of got introduced to drugs and realized that one could be a genius, super smart, like you are, and also a partier and wild.
Well, there was like my father's favorite guy. He really loved MDMA and he had the full body Japanese tattoo.
Yeah.
The monks masturbating.
Oh, that's him. Yeah.
And that's him. And so he, but he was not into the social aspect of it. So he didn't like it because it made him loving. He liked it because it made him feel, have like mischievous adventures. So he would go to a very high-end antique store and switch the price tags on very expensive items to very cheap items.
Yeah.
Just to cause, wreak havoc, basically.
He'd leave them for others though.
Yeah. It was kind of a chaotic good. In a sense. I'm a chaotic neutral, so I can understand chaotic good and chaotic evil. But so somebody's getting something very valuable or has something very valuable that they don't value because, you know, the price tag doesn't mean anything because it's not the right one. So that kind of thing. I mean, this is how Antiques Roadshow was born, you know, these kinds of events. So that's, and he was such a brilliant guy and he still is a brilliant guy.
So it seems like you learned from these people at your parents' bookstore. How did these like smart, gay, artsy humans kind of like introduce you to that world of partying that you ended up getting into?
Well, they would take me around. They would take me to events and they would take me to sort of very like punk rock kinds of drag performances that would happen in like ice cream shops and like places that you wouldn't expect. And
yes,
whether it was wrestling, there was like a drag queen wrestling craze in the late 80s in San Francisco. So you would see that. There was also this sort of very like legendary, like gay bars that would have Empress of San Francisco, those drag queen pageants.
So
there
was a
old guard there too.
Is there a particular drug-addled night that is seared in your brain?
Well, my friend, she has passed away, but she was always like, her name is Jerry, and she was like very much my drug friend and kind of like a spirit guide when it came to drugs. And we were at this rave. It was in Pacific Heights. It was like a very kind of hoity-toity party rave. And we were there, and I was so high that I actually saw Mastodon in the kitchen. And it was really real to me. And I don't really have like visual kinds of hallucinations like that. But that particular time, I was so off my head on drugs that I saw, I was like, it's a mastodon. There's a mastodon in the kitchen. And Jerry turned to me. She said, well, there's not going to be a mastodon because they wouldn't invite a mastodon to a party in Pacific Heights. Also, they're extinct.
It's great.
Two counts against the fact that it's not real.
Can't be a mastodon.
And I'm telling you that it's not a mastodon. But it's a really interesting experience to think about, like, actually seeing a mastodon, but in the kitchen.
Yeah, chef mastodon. Who knows? Yeah.
You know, just cooking up some chowder in a bread bowl or something.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And your mother had no idea about this whole drug time.
No, I mean, one time she caught me smoking pot at the house. It was cigarettes and then we'd smoke pot. And it was like, she was very worried, not because of the drug aspect, but because it would damage my brain. I know that was really the focus of it, that it was like, she knows it's going to make you stupid. And she's just like very worried about that. She didn't care about that. You know, I was sort of being like, whatever, free or lax or that kind of stuff. It was more that it was going to be a brain damaging thing, which she was right. And I really am so still affected by these drugs that, you know, haven't been in my system for a while. And it's sad because my mother, you know, used to always say in Korean, what genius, the word for genius is chunje. What a chunje. Chanje, what a chanje, chanje. You know, like that was like a major point of my existence was because I was such a genius.
Wow.
And so the latest conversations with my mother now are really all on FaceTime. And when we FaceTime and we Skype or we Zoom, she can see me thinking and she can see my mind working. And she's like freaked out that it's so slow. So chunje is genius, but slow is chunchunny. And so it's similar in tone, but it's so the Chunjae has become Chunjae, Chunjae, like, because she's like, do it slower, do it slower. And she can see my mind working slowly, and I can see the upset in her face around it. Like, and she doesn't want to tell it to herself that I have slowed down mentally, because in her mind, everything is right there. Like, my mother's hearing is going a little bit. That's why she has to look at me when we're talking, because it's easier for her to understand me when she can see me speak. But when she sees me speak, I can also see the upset in her face of like, you're talking too slow. Your mind is working slower. That's not what happens to us. We get smarter as we get older. And I feel bad disappointing her, but I devoted that part of my brain to adventure. And kids, don't do drugs. I mean, I really hate the whole just say no campaign, because it was very racist and it really led to a lot of people being incarcerated when they shouldn't have been.
Right.
And we're paying for that now, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's one of the causes of systemic racism. And it's one of the problems in our society that we need to untangle and deal with and unpack fully. Mm-hmm. But the mentality around that of like, let's not do drugs because it does make you stupid. That's actually kind of true.
And how long did you go on to party for before you got sobs?
I've had quite a few episodes, but I haven't partied. I've been sober for quite a few years now. I've had some, probably last episode was like 5 years ago, but I've really hung it up for good. I really feel the damage. I've done my partying. I really do feel like Salvador Dali when he says, I don't do drugs, I am drugs. Because I am drugs.
Does your mom know you're sober now?
Yes. Yes. They've tried to visit me. I was in rehab for a long time. They tried to visit me there, but then they were like scared that they weren't going to be able to get out again. Because Koreans in general don't seek mental health help. And so my cousin in the 80s once tried to kill herself. And so then her mother and her moved into a mental institution together because her mother had to make it all about her. So it's a very much like, if you go seek help at a hospital, it's very performative. And I think my parents were trying to avoid that aspect, and they were afraid they were going to have to move in with me. So they didn't come.
And how does she feel about you being sober now?
Oh, she's really, I think, very relieved, but also disappointed because she can see my brain working slower.
So this show is called Don't Tell My Mother. Because people, you know, often don't tell their mothers these stories. Sometimes they do. But my producer actually, hold on a second. She's chatting me that, Margaret, I think your mom is calling into the show.
Wow. Okay. Wait, that's great.
Where do I call her? Is this Mrs. Cho? I don't even know.
Yeah, that's fine.
okay. Liza, can you let Mrs. Cho on the phone? Mrs. Cho, is that you?
Hello, hi. It's Margaret's mom.
Hi, mommy. Hi.
Hi. Oh, you look so beautiful.
Oh, thank you, mommy.
Thank you for having me. Hi, so.
Mrs. Cho, I'm you're like an icon to me because, you know, I love your daughter so much. I feel like I know you. Mm-hmm. Do you know, Mrs. Cho, that Margaret used to be a big partier? I don't know the word in Korean, but like a big druggie. Maybe I'll say it that way.
Yeah.
Well, it was no. Sometimes Margaret looked a little sleepy. she's a little sleepy, but just in the morning, and she would just say, "Oh, you know, it's just comedy show, you know, last night comedy show." So I said, oh, comedy take a lot of energy.
Mommy, my brain has slowed down because I've done so many drugs. Sorry.
Oh, I think you are perfect pace. I understand you.
Thank you. I'm glad.
That's all that matters.
Good.
Yeah. And if you want to help the brain, just have lots of tea.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do that.
Mrs. Cho, have you ever done drugs?
Just one time I had just a sleepy time tea.
Margaret, what is the best piece of advice that mommy's given you?
She said always eat many food. She's eat food. That's what she said yesterday. She's like, you have to eat food every day. I was like, all right, thanks.
I remember. Yeah. I tell you yesterday, you do so much better, mommy, than I do.
You do so good.
It's so good. Moran.
That,
yes, I remember. And you, do you listen?
Yeah.
Eat food every day.
Mommy, is there anything else that you want to tell Margaret while we're together here?
I am so proud of you. You eat food every day.
Thanks,
and
Mommy.
Pressure cook. It's good.
Okay. I have to say, Margaret is pulling all of our legs. That is not her mommy. That is her good friend, the comedian Atsuko. Atsuko, thank you for being here today and filling in for Mom. How did you and Margaret actually meet? Because I'm wondering if
she was on my first podcast, and then I really enjoy Atsuko's comedy, so we've done a lot of shows together and had fun, both
yes.
live and in person, and also socially distanced. So we had a good time.
Yeah, I was very honored. I said, "You play your mom?" I don't know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it doesn't sound like a hate crime.
No, it was so good. It was so good. You did such a good job.
Yes.
Was Margaret like formative in your comedy? Like
she
as
was.
Just such a fucking baller?
Yeah. I mean, I bet you hear this all the time, Margaret, all the time. And I'm, you know, and, but yeah, for sure. Cause I was like a church goer in my teen years. And then it was her DVD that someone snuck to me during a sermon and said, "This is stand-up comedy."
Which one was it?
It was the Notorious.
Oh.
Notorious Cho. And
Notorious.
Ooh, yeah.
That's a dirty one. Quite a dirty show.
Stopped going to church.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty like, you know, incredible that they were, it's such a bold statement to say, this is stand-up comedy. This is what you need to know. And it was so funny. And it was, yeah, just you're so unapologetic. So it was really cool. That was my first exposure to stand-up.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Margaret, did you know that?
I didn't know, but now I know. Thank you, Atsuko. That's amazing.
Thank you, Michelle, you know, who broke the rules by giving me something so dirty during church.
I know, during church and all.
What a great story, and what a great entree into stand-up
in
church. It's amazing. And it's Margaret.
So cool. Yeah.
Something that you do, Margaret, that is so cool, and Atsuko, you know this, but you, for as long as I've known about you, and I've lived in Los Angeles, which is like 18 years, you've always mentored up-and-coming comics that wouldn't ordinarily get the attention they deserve.
That's like my greatest achievement is inspiring other Asian American comedians. So I'm really proud of that, you know? So I think it's wonderful.
If you could tell yourself something when you started in the 80s, what would it be?
Just don't worry and don't do drugs, but not in a just say no way. Just don't do them.
Or do them and stop.
Or no, do them and stop. Do. Or just do in moderation, maybe. Or just do them one at a time. That's probably the better advice. Just do them one at a time. You know, you don't have to do it all at one time. That's, you know, key.
I know. Moderation's so hard to do in moderation, isn't it?
I know. It is.
One last thing. Is there anything you would tell your mom? Either your real mom or Atsuko. Either mom.
I think it's just that those brain cells are not coming back anytime soon. But it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
It was like there was an excess maybe. So maybe now it's just normal number.
Now it's good.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you, Atsuko.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Cho.
I love you
guys so much. So much. I will not do any drugs, but that's because I don't do them anymore either. And I'd love you guys to take me out. Will you do it?
Yeah.
If it's not one thing,
it's your mother.
Margaret, how would you say that in Korean?
그거서 엄마 때문에 그랬어. It's because of your mother. It's like that. That's what I said.
Oh, I love that. That's good. That's good.
Yes.
Folks, thank you so much for listening. That was amazing. I absolutely love them. We have awesome, awesome guests coming up, news, exciting announcements. Keep up with us on the socials, Instagram at Don't Tell My Mother, and our website, don'ttellmymother.com. And if you like what you heard, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't Tell My Mother is created, hosted, and executive produced by Nikki Levy, my daughter. The show is executive produced by John Cryer. Oh my God, I love him. And Lisa Joyner and Jody Zuckerman Weiner at Discount Sushi. Our producer is Liza Glukoft. Co-producer, Andrew Condon. Mixed and edited by Donovan Bullen. Theme song by Donovan Bullen and Joe McKenzie. Distributed by Acast. Now go call your mothers.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.